What does a food bowl and adolescence have in common? A lot more than you'd think, and that's exactly what we're talking about. Welcome back to the McCann Dogs Podcast. Hi, Rob.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Rob.
It's nice to be back again
for joining
in the
us.
Podcast
yeah.
room.
You may remember Rob from previous podcasts.
You may remember me from such episodes as. Oh, my goodness.
That's our Simpsons reference.
Yeah, yep. There you go, Albert. Yeah. Albert, I got you covered.
Yep.
All right. So I had to go back and look and refresh my memory of when we had you on so that I can refresh my memory of exactly how old your pup is, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. So it turns out it was a Christmas episode.
Yeah, just before Christmas.
You got a puppy just before Christmas. So yeah. What... tell us about Pontiac Bandit again. Give us a little recap.
Oh, right from the beginning?
Sure.
Yeah, he showed up.
He
showed up. We picked him up. Well, it wasn't planned to get him. It was just came from a breeder. It was an accidental litter. It's a Belgian Malinois and Kelpie cross.
Which is an odd cross.
Yes.
Yeah, it's pretty intense.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's for sure. if you see him now, you can't really see any Kelpie in him. Most people are kind of surprised with that. But picked him up in mid-November, had him since, and it's been fantastic.
Perfect.
I got to tell you, though, like, it's a lot of dog. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest thing. So it's like, I wouldn't want to be my first dog.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yes.
You know? No doubt. Yes. Yeah, it's a nice privileged perspective to be here and thinking like, whoo, I'm glad. Yes. And you never really know what it's going to end up being like. So, I have a puppy coming home in 2 weeks and I'm excited as all get out and hoping, of course, for the most puppy I can possibly get out of this pup. So I want like the bravado. I want him to be, you know, full of beans and full of himself and, you know.
And you know,
direct that properly. But
call him like PB or just Bandit most of the time. But and he is all that, and which is fantastic. But having the skills to kind of put like harness it is the big
difference. Harnessing that.
Exactly.
Yes.
To be able to harness that energy and like let it out at the right times.
Yeah.
And how old is he now?
Let's see. He'd be maybe 9 months today.
Actually,
Nine months next week.
I saw that little picture you put of him at Pontiac Bandit at 10 a.m.
Oh, yeah.
And he's lying there nicely in the grass. And then at 10 p.m., was that Gozar from Ghostbusters?
Yes.
Yeah, so at 10 p.m., he turns into Gozar from Ghostbusters.
Just loses a bit.
Yeah, some nights it's the witching hours can happen a little earlier, can happen a little later. Sometimes he just gets that little look in his eye and it's fun for about a minute or two.
Right, yeah.
And then
you
have to re-harness that energy once again.
Yes. For sure. Well, and I think that what people will often miss when they're looking for a specific breed or a specific type of dog is that there's so much more than just the look of the dog. You have to think about the energy level of the dog. What is going to satisfy that dog's drives? How much effort do you need to put in? What kind of training, et cetera? So all of those things are so up in the air when you don't really know what you know.
Right, yes. And Bandit's right smack in the middle of his adolescence.
Yeah.
So basically you have like a 16, 17-year-old boy who's like, woohoo, let's go.
Yeah. Party. Time.
Yes. As instructor Steve says, I'm going to, he always says the same thing. I'm going to steal your car and break into the liquor cabinet or something like that. And I think, wow.
Hide the keys and lock the liquor
order?
Cabinet.
Right, yeah. That must be quite the
And I
sturdy liquor cabinet to need a car.
Right, yeah. And so I thought Steve was quite the teenager. Yeah.
That too. And we'll have to question instructor Steve on the
and it's
moves
Steve.
Of his youth.
It's instructor Steve's birthday today too.
Oh, yes.
Yes,
as
it is.
We record, it is instructor Steve's birthday.
Yes.
So he'll have a whole bunch of belated birthday wishes.
Yes.
At that point.
We won't shame him with his age.
No.
Well, he's only like 28, so he's not at that point yet.
I didn't even think he was that old. Yeah. I thought he was 19.
Oh, you know, he might be.
Yeah.
He might be. Instructor Steve,
he's still in
his
teenage days. Yeah. That explains his behavior.
Yeah. All righty, let's get back to dogs and dog training and Pontiac Bandit. So you said he wasn't planned. I know we've introduced Pontiac Bandit before, but tell me at what point he was planned. At what point did you say, you know what, I'm going to bring this puppy home.
So the person that I got him from, it was the original breeder that I have Blue with, which is my Australian cattle dog, who's about five right now. And I stayed in contact with the person that connected me with her originally, or how I got him. Longer story that I don't want to no, not necessary to get okay. into. But she posted that there was another litter available, that it was an accidental litter between her female, excuse me, Belgian Malinois and her Kelpie. And I looked at it, and you know what you do. You scroll by.
Yeah,
and,
that's interesting.
Oh, that looks so nice. Yeah. Like, oh, wow, yeah.
And then you go, no, and then you go, yeah, and you kind of, and then you ask a question like a week later, and then, so it just sort of happened that he became available. He was already spoken for at first, and then he became available, and I don't know the whole story behind that, and then they asked, hey, were you still interested? I'm like, well, now I got to have to think about it. Yes. And then we talked as a family. I think we talked about this before. We talked about it as a family and everything else. And it was just like, it might not be the perfect time, but we figured it can be the right time.
Right. Yes.
And four dogs I have now at home. It's quite a bit.
What are their ages? What are their ages?
12, 7.5, 5, and 9 months.
Okay.
So yeah, it's a pretty busy.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
And they're all large dogs.
So right. You've got a full house. Yes. And you have a young son too.
Yeah. So. Well, he's getting older now too.
I mean, he is. He'll be 14 this year. He's old enough to put
to work now. He's 14.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
That's crazy.
It is
14,
crazy.
Yeah.
Time flies.
Yeah. He'll be married soon.
Yeah. But count the days till he's out of the house already.
There's a few more yet, but
yes. You know,
it's coming soon.
It's coming soon.
Okay. So, I still sort of want to know how old was Pontiac Bandit at the point where you said, okay, I'm committing to this puppy. Oh. So how much time did you have to prepare?
I think it was about, they all went home around the 8 week mark, but then we had already planned a family vacation, I think.
Okay.
And so we were going to be gone at the 10 week point. So then there was sort of a, we had to kind of come up with a plan because I said, I'm not going to bring this puppy home. Then go and pawn it off on someone else or have someone else look after it for a week and a half. Mm-hmm. Plus, we had to also have someone look after the other three dogs at that point already. Right. So, like, adding a puppy into that wasn't going
to
be
fair. And a brand new puppy to boot.
Yes, yes.
So you're asking somebody to get up in the middle of the night for you.
Right.
And all those fun things.
Yes.
And we were able to work everything out with the breeder, and they ended up, it worked out really good because they were able to bring it back up to, Canada because it was from Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And we actually got off the airplane. Picked the puppy up right from our trip and came home, and then it's been fantastic ever since. So,
you were well rested from a vacation.
Yes. Yeah. Ready for a puppy.
That's a good way to do it.
So would he have been about 7 or 8 weeks when you said we're going to get him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. Because we could have picked him up at the 8 week point, but again.
Yeah. Too much going on. Yeah.
So once we were able to make that work out, it was solid that we were going to bring this puppy home because we just were able to make everything work out and all the kind of pieces fell into place.
Yeah. So at that point, you've got this brand new baby puppy, you know, 10-ish weeks old, between 9 and 10 weeks, somewhere in there. And they tend to be really easy at that point, right? Mm-hmm. They want to follow you around instinctually. They are, you know, they're uncertain of their new lives. So there's this instinctual drive for them to be close to what they perceive as safety. So a lot of the times that will lull people into this false sense of security where they're thinking, oh, I won the lottery with this puppy.
Yes.
They come when they're called already. They follow me around the house. I'm not going to have to do any training at all.
So. Yeah, they feel that the puppy's trained.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
We get phone calls sometimes in the office and people will say, oh, my puppy doesn't need to know all that. You know, he already can do all that.
Yeah.
And he's only 12 weeks. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my goodness.
Only in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. Yes. Yes.
So, did you have that period or did you end up skipping over that period? Like how were things when Bandit first came home?
I almost like can't remember and it wasn't that long ago, but it's such a blur. But I think it's just because I was prepared. I kind of knew what those steps were going to be and I knew, hey, this is going pretty easy right now, but that's not going to last.
Exactly,
The switch is going to flip a little bit. They're going to grow a little bit, want to explore a little bit more. And then now adolescence part is kicking in. You can see you got to kind of keep the foot on the gas the whole time with them at this point, even though you feel like it isn't. And then just more introduction to more environments. You know, that's who I kept moving forward on that, where I really had a better understanding of after instructing for so long, of the right time to push those little boundaries instead of just kind of, hey, let's see what happens.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And it's so important to acknowledge that at some point things will change, right? Mm-hmm. And this is the part where a lot of the times our students think like, what happened to that rug that was underneath me? Like, it's gone now. All of a sudden, this puppy that was following me around now doesn't even know I exist. Mm-hmm. So somewhere around 12-week mark, we end up with that first development period where the puppies start to realize, oh, there's a big world out there. And then 4 months, they gain a little bit more independence from a developmental standpoint. And then things coast a little bit for a couple of months. And then, boom, we hit the adolescent period. Yeah. So adolescence can rear its ugly head anytime from about 6 months of age all the way up until, you know, anywhere around 2 years of age when you hit final maturity with the dog. And before anybody panics, it's not all encompassing. You know, it's usually peaks and valleys. So you're going to see good behavior and then you're going to see it derail where all of a sudden there's a different puppy that comes out of the crate the next day and you're like, what happened to my good dog? And then back in they go and the next day, it's another wonderful puppy. That sounded like I suggested that when the puppy's bad, you put them back in their crate and ignore them till the next day when they're better. That's definitely not what my suggestion was. But having said that, it happens like that, right?
And it varies with every dog too.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like I've had some dogs where I really notice it and other dogs where I don't notice it at all.
Yeah.
So it's luck of the draw.
Yeah, absolutely. So now my question for you here, Rob, is, have you started to notice any of those naughty behaviors, any of those peaks and valleys that you tend to get with adolescents?
I've actually been noticing the last couple of weeks, whereas like that listening, that little snappiness where he'd turn around and just make that eye contact right away when we're practicing or training anything. And then now it's a little bit, I want to keep looking over here.
It's a little conflicted.
Yeah. And so I have to work a little harder again versus... before, again, it was starting to be a little easy.
And you know what else?
Peaks and valleys.
Yeah.
His Pontiac Bandit's adolescence is coinciding with spring too. And spring is an exciting time for dogs and especially him. He's never had a spring.
Yeah.
No. So you're getting the excitement of spring and the excitement of being a teenager all at one moment.
But lucky. In the same time, like it's been great too, because like the exposure from being able to bring him to work every day or any day that I want to. And, be able to train in between. That's the sort of the game changer. What I went back to when we first started about having that right breed or the breed that you can understand what's going to handle, because you couldn't have this dog if you had to drive into work.
Oh yeah. So if he was being left 8 hours a day in a crate,
it would be way too much. Yes. And there's some dogs you can like that are built a little bit more that they don't have that energy release and everything else. But man, they need to work and they need something to do.
Absolutely. And one of the first ways of guaranteeing that you're going to have a good experience in getting a dog is matching a breed that fits your lifestyle.
Right. Yeah.
You know, unless you're planning on changing your lifestyle drastically to meet the dog's needs, get something that will fit into your life. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because if you have a dog like Pontiac Bandit that wants to go all day and could pretty much have a full-time job right alongside you working all day long and you can't provide that, that is going to be a tough situation.
Yeah, you come home from work and you're tired and you want to sit down on the couch. There's not a chance that's happening.
Absolutely.
They're ready to go.
Yeah, and that Kelpie heritage, working on the Australian outback with those sheep, that's hundreds and hundreds of acres.
Yeah,
they're moving all day looking after sheep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like a walk around the block is not going to suffice a dog with that background.
They need that mental stimulation at the same time too. And then the winter, I mean, we didn't have a bad winter this year or like a very, heavy snowfall winter, I guess the best way to put it. But you're inside a little bit more, you know, it gets dark at 5 or 6 and you're like, oh, I don't feel like going out.
On the good days.
Yeah. Yes. So you just work in different areas, but that mental stimulation is huge.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like when you can't get all that physical energy out of them.
Yeah. And Kelpies aren't actually an overly popular breed. So a lot of people might be listening to this and going, oh, I wonder what a Kelpie is.
Right.
So there was actually a really fascinating series on Netflix, and the name of it is escaping me right now.
I did watch that too.
It was awesome. I really loved watching it. So basically, the pretense, I'll just quickly tell everybody, the pretense was that there was this litter of Kelpie puppies, and they were being sent to different homes and different expertise levels to look at how quickly or how daunting the process was of creating good sheepdogs in these Kelpies. And it was fascinating watching the different training styles of the people, where the fallout was from them, where the success was.
And this was on Netflix?
It was on Netflix,
Wow, that does sound interesting. Yeah. We'll have to Google it.
I could remember what the name of it was. But yeah, basically it was this litter of Kelpie puppies spread out all over Australia and followed for the first year or so of their life with a bunch of check-ins and benchmarks. And it was just
fabulous. Some of them went to like, or like one would go to like a working farm and like a, and then the other one would go to like a world champion herder.
Right.
You know? So it was a really interesting thing a while ago.
Oh, yeah, I would like to watch that.
I'm going to have to watch it again.
We're going to have a screening here at McCann's.
Let's do it. Let's do it. Rob should be promoting it everywhere with a Kelpie. Well, Kelpie Cross, but Kelpie. Nonetheless. So, okay. So let's get back to Pontiac Bandit and adolescence. So can you pinpoint a moment or a snapshot where you thought, you know what? I think you've hit that age. Were there any moments?
You know what? It was his strength.
Okay.
That because I felt like I've been prepared just because of being at McCann's for so long now. But his strength was the thing, that moment where I could just, I realized, okay, now he's hitting that adolescence point where he, he's like, when you're tugging with him, you can almost pull my darn arm off. And it's just like, he's like, play. And it's not anything aggressive. He's just so strong. Yeah,
they are surprisingly strong. I remember with my Malinois playing with them and you know, knowing the strength behind them. And then you talk to non-dog people and you can tell they don't understand the strength of a dog.
Yeah.
Like I imagine with Quincy or Rottweiler, the power behind her. Yeah.
I would not tug with that dog if I did not have a bungee tug. I would not, because there came a point where I thought she is going to dislocate my shoulder. You know, we would have these great, and I like to tug powerfully with my dogs. It's one of the things actually that with tollers, I work really hard on getting a strong tug drive in because they naturally have softer mouths. So it is work to build a harder tug with them and also to maintain a balance where they'll tug hard, but then they'll handle a duck very delicately and without doing damage. It trips my trigger though, figuring out what's
going to
work.
Trips my trigger.
It really does. Figuring out what's going to work with each individual dog. But yeah, with Quincy, there came a point where I thought I cannot tug with this dog if I do not have a bungee tug, because she would thrash and I would think my shoulder is going to pop right out of its socket. The power in that dog was incredible. Absolutely incredible. Yes. So
I think that was that big turning point when it was like, there's a lot of dog in there.
Yeah.
And I wanted Rob to say, well, I went out one day and there was some smoke coming from behind the shed. And sure enough, he was smoking behind the shed. He had cigarettes.
Loud music.
Yep.
Well, I got to tell you, I would have made a lot of mistakes, like dog 12, well, my 12-year-old dog. A little bit different how he's set up for my... You know, and because he's not out in the house at all. We utilize the crate still. Kept the dogs separated for quite a bit so we could build the relationship and then slowly introduce the dogs, because the 12-year-old dog doesn't want to play with the 18-month or the 8-month-old dog.
Right, got it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And it's always good to advocate for your older dogs, always. A lot of the times people will ask us, well, how do I make the older dog more tolerant of the puppy? Don't ask them to be more tolerant of the puppy. You know, the older dogs in your house, they don't need to play with that puppy if they don't want to. And they have earned the right to be older dogs. And it really needs to be that you advocate for that older dog and help the puppy learn to have manners around the older dog. So you don't end up with a resentment situation. You don't end up with that older dog finally going, okay, you know what? I'm tolerant until I'm not. And then now you're going down, pup. Like it's our responsibility to discipline and deal with the puppy. It should not be the older dog's responsibility in the house.
And just even manage too, like four large dogs. I know some people have way like more dogs. I don't know how that happens.
I know. The most I've ever had is four. And I was like, no, you know what? I like having two. I really, really like having two. Three max, four is too much.
I'm not allowed to look at any Facebook posts of you're cut puppy off. Or litters for
now, is that
years.
Self-imposed or is that
well, it's self-imposed.
Family rules?
I think it's a family rule, and I need to keep on top of it.
Right.
Myself.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, there's a couple of things that you said there that I want to touch on, because I know that people are probably wondering, what do you mean you didn't let him out with your other dogs, and what do you mean he's not loose in the house yet? So let's start with crating and management. in a nutshell, what is the point in having him crated rather than being loose in the house?
Well, if I can't watch him and I can't supervise him and like focus supervision, they're going to get into trouble.
Yeah.
Right? So when he's in his crate, he chills out. He spends a lot of time out of the crate.
But of
when
course,
he
yeah.
does, he has a little bit more freedom, and I have a house line, or I even have him attached to me sometimes when I'm getting stuff done around the house. I just attach him to my belt so we can't, well, when he was younger. Now mm-hmm. I don't even have a house line on him anymore because I put those steps in place.
Right.
But I put the other dogs in there in a separate room just so they didn't have the hassle of him, because like a 3-month-old puppy,
yeah.
just sprinting across the house.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah.
Flying teeth. That's right, all yeah. they are at 12 weeks.
And so then slowly introducing them one at a time, and then going for walks one at a time, and then a little bit of group walking starting now. Because again, it's hard to still managing yeah. him mm-hmm. like out in. The yard's pretty good and everything else. I don't have a fenced yard, so I have to have him on a long line the whole time, mm-hmm. which is really good. And but it's just that thoughtful management. Like, those dogs didn't ask for another one. And my the next youngest down, Blue, just loves him. Mm-hmm. Like, just wants to play with him every moment of the day, too.
Good.
But I need to have that relationship with me so I can have yeah. him, you know, listen when we need to, right. be able to be down the road, be able to take them everywhere we want to go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So for, it sounds like then for quite a while, you walked him separately yep. from your other dogs. And what was sort of the main point in that? I know you mentioned managing him already, but what else comes to mind?
It just like one, like I touched on it before, just the strength, and like something comes down the road or they get distracted and they see a bird. All my other dogs could care less at that yeah. point too. But, they just pull, and then what happens? Where yeah. it's,
you've got four dogs.
Maybe
in
I'm
tow.
Overprotective on it, but like that leash, like people's always, you've dropped the leash before, it slips out of your hand, whatever mm-hmm. the situation. So, and I want to just focus in on that one dog, so I can yeah. build him to be comfortable with everyone else, and it's not just some free for all.
Yeah, absolutely. And you need to be able to be in an optimal position to train.
Yeah.
So if you've got three leashes in one hand and one leash in the other hand, or however you're managing four leashes and four dogs, how can you individually address a behavioral problem or some sort mm-hmm. of mistake in obedience with your young dog if you have no hands? You know, mechanics are so important in dog training. Yeah. Timing is so important in dog training. If we have all these distractions of the other dog, how can we possibly help our young dogs learn? So I think that that's such an important
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, even taking the amount of like three other dogs, like one other dog trying to do any of that yeah, is right. near impossible, because the puppy just wants to get
you
closer
so
to the other
right.
dog.
Yes.
You can't feed it. You're just managing. You're managing dogs. The whole time yeah. instead of training them to walk together.
Yeah.
Right. So first they need to learn to walk. Then they soon walk together
right.
a little
yes.
bit.
Exactly. And a lot of the times I think people just want to get all of their dogs out at the same time and not realizing how detrimental that is. So, you know, if you've got a multi-dog household, it's good advice to make sure you have enough time mm-hmm. to deal with a puppy individually, mm-hmm. because that's really going to be the best setup for the first period of that dog's life, making sure that you can give that puppy 100% of your attention on walks, 100% of your attention when they're loose in the house, will ensure that you can give them good, solid information and they're not picking up bad habits in the interim. And then, of course, we have to work back from those bad habits. It just makes our job tougher mm-hmm. in the long run to have to do that. So
putting in that effort in the first, you know, 8 to 10, 12 months of teaching them what that sort of expectation yeah. is on their own, and then you don't have to do it for the next, like, manage mm-hmm. it for 12 more years.
Yeah.
They know what to do.
Right. Exactly.
I think a lot of people too, they have a dog that they've put tons and tons of training into, and they've got them to the point where they feel like they'd like a new puppy, and then they get the new puppy, but they forget all the work
yes.
that they put into that first dog yeah. and they're a bit negligent with the second puppy. And sometimes they'll let the older dog be a babysitter for the younger dog, and the younger dog never ends up as well trained. So I think we really need to remember when we bring in new dogs, they need just as much training and commitment than the older dogs did in our household too.
Absolutely. Yeah.
yeah. And one of the really good reasons that we talk about not getting two pups at the same time, a lot of the times people think that they'll raise each other well and it just, it ends up being right. twice the work, mm-hmm. not necessarily twice the fun, but the work.
How would you feel if you had two Pontiac Bandits right now?
Oh, can you imagine?
Pontiac and Bandit.
It wouldn't happen. No. It just couldn't happen.
If you're watching on the podcast, you saw how big Rob's eyes just yeah. got at that question. If you're listening, you'll just have to, you'll have to envision that. But let's get really big.
Let's get Rob another puppy. Surprise, Rob.
You know what? You can raise my puppy. No. How
about that? You know what? The puppy raising experience this time around, though, just seemed to flow.
Did it?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, good, that's good.
That's the one... kind of, it's answering some of the questions at first was like, I didn't get those things because of yeah. all the things we implement.
Right, yes.
And
yes.
that is the thing with the McCann method. Our goal is to set things up for success. We yeah. don't want to leave it to chance. We don't want to let the dog make the mistake and then correct them for making that mistake mm-hmm. because that doesn't even make sense. You know, it's like me correcting you for not understanding math equations. Mm-hmm. Like, how is that ever going to help you learn math equations? Mm-hmm. I want to help you learn the things you need to learn first. And then once you clearly know if there is a situation where you don't do what you should do, then there's an opportunity where we might need to use correction to get you back on track. But in the teaching phase, it just doesn't make yeah. sense.
And you don't start preventing. With algebra.
Exactly. Right. Yes. Yeah, yeah, you and, got it.
And the prevention of bad habits too. Yes. My grandmother learned to drive on her own, and she forever drove an automatic with 2 feet, one on the gas, one on the brake.
Oh.
And that's how she drove. And a bad habit,
yeah.
That, you know, if she'd gone to driving school, you know, would have been prevented.
Yes.
But, you know, what she learned first, she learned best. And till the day she stopped driving, she drove with 1 foot on the gas, one on the brake. And as she got older, she kept her foot on the brake. I remember following her, and she's driving, and her taillights were constantly on.
Oh,
she was, yeah.
Interesting.
So with our dogs, we don't want them yeah. to learn something, and then now we're fighting it forever all yes. their lives.
Yeah, absolutely. And what they learn first, they learn best. Mm-hmm. So that definitely would be, yeah.
And like now we've moved to the point, too, because we put in that work where we have the dogs out under the same level, like not the three, but three are kind of just keeping the couches from floating. That's what I
That's what my dog's for, too, yeah.
But when the puppy's out and I'm supervising, I can have all four of them out now, and the mm-hmm. puppy isn't just going crazy.
Yeah.
He knows his boundaries around the other dogs as well.
Yes.
I'm not going to leave that to chance, though, when they're all four of them are out. I'm definitely 100% supervising then too.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. For sure. For sure.
My and Honda until- also, just as a side note, mm-hmm. when he's not holding down couches from floating, he also keeps the elephants away.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. I've never had an elephant in my house, and it's because I have dogs. They keep elephants away.
Ah, mm-hmm. That's very specious reasoning, yes. but you know, it works. I like it. Alrighty. So as we continue with our development period and we hit adolescence, if you're set up so well to begin with, it really doesn't seem like a big life change to have to deal with adolescence, mm. which is what we always try our best to convince our students, that your life is going to be so much easier if you do a little bit of prevention and a lot of training, and then you let those things sort of balance out as life goes on, where now you're doing less training and less prevention and the dog gets more freedom. But they've learned how to make good choices. Mm-hmm. And we've done all this work to help them make those good choices. But having said that, I know that adolescence is sometimes bigger than all that. And it sometimes challenges us a little bit more than all that. So I'm sure that you are heading into adolescence thinking about a good ongoing management, good ongoing yep. training, and all of the things that will continue to set Pontiac Bandit and yourself up for success and great relationship and great information and all of that. So I want to touch on some of the changes, if they are changes or if they're just ongoing management, et cetera, structure that you'll be doing. So you talked about giving him more freedom in the house with the other dogs, et cetera. Is any of that going to change at this point now that you're starting to hit that realm?
I think you just sort of assess what's happening day to day. Mm-hmm. Like if you see, okay, if I've had to correct him, or he's getting a little bit too close, like not too close, but it's kind of hard to explain too, because they all just kind of are milling about at times too.
Right.
But if it gets to the point where I need to interrupt it, then I need to take that step back and just assess, okay, is he ready for this at this point? Like, and it may be, yeah, fine in the house, but maybe not in a closer quarter downstairs or whatever the situation mm-hmm. might be. So you're just kind of assessing that moment and then not letting them re-rehearse those mistakes.
Right.
Or if he's more in tune with one of the other dogs and I call his name, he's not going to respond to me. Well, I need to work on that a little bit too. Right.
Yeah.
I just kind of can't let that slide because mm-hmm. if it slides now, then when we go outside,
right.
and that's my big concern too. It's like I'm out in the country, but back on the farmer's fields, and I don't have like a fenced yard, so I need to have a solid recall for sure.
Absolutely.
And I'm managing it a little bit differently too, because it's not just letting your dog. And even if I had a fenced yard, I wouldn't just let him out and play on his own. But I just got to be a little bit more aware because they can see a squirrel and take off, or a
absolutely.
Rabbit, or any
right.
of
yeah.
those things. So.
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of like of management strategies in the house and whatnot, you said that he's spending more time out of his crate, but he still spends quite a bit of time in his crate, I would assume, when you can't supervise him.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think that any of that is going to, like, you're going to have to shift any of those tactics and have him spend more time away?
Shifting in a sense of like he'll get more and more freedom as he goes.
A little bit in either direction. So I mean, right now is that this is the period that you're yeah. sort of reacting on a day to day basis. So what are you anticipating? I guess is what I'm wondering.
Hoping and anticipating that we're just going to keep moving a little bit forward, a little bit forward, a little bit forward. But we're ready for those little setbacks again. Whereas I'm going to assess those moments of like what's too much in that environment for him mm-hmm. that he's comfortable in. Obviously, at the home, it's the kind of the easiest place to be training and have that attention from your dog versus taking them pretty much anywhere else.
Right.
I always say to our students when they're like, "Oh, he's great at here, but it's or great at home," but and they're like, Disneyland. Everywhere your dog goes is like Disneyland.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because home's boring.
Yeah.
So again, assessing the moment and mm-hmm. then seeing, okay, what does he need? What's he capable of at this point? And then manage it or train it.
Yeah.
And it all depending on what you can do at that, in that moment.
Right.
So.
Right. So more management, more tactics mm-hmm. to keep him from getting himself into mischief. And I
yeah.
think a lot of people are probably thinking like, how does this all fit in with the life that we've established? Because at this point, you know, you probably have some routine. He's probably got some favorite toys. He's probably mm-hmm. got some favorite rituals. There's probably all sorts of patterns that you've created in your life now with this dog after, you know, 8-9 months of living with the dog. Chances are he's picking up on some of the things that you'll want him to and giving you some automatic responses, etc. So I guess what I'm trying to get at is the resources that we use to continue to drive our leadership forward. You know, this is another thing that we do as with McCann Method is we make sure that we control resources enough that the dog has to look to us for all the good things in life. So things like freedom, things mm-hmm. like the favorite toys, things like, you know, having the opportunity to be out loose in the house and hang out with all the other dogs, you know, all of those things are really, they're benefits
mm-hmm.
that the dog should earn. So when we get to the point where they have earned some of those things through good behavior and our training is coming together and everything is starting to really gel and make sense, and then all of a sudden, whoosh, there goes that rug out from under us when adolescence hits, what are some of the resources that he has that you know are important to him, that you know are important to you as well, that you know you're going to use to help drive forward leadership, et cetera?
Like a lot, just continue training and like reintroduce a house line if I need to, for sure.
Let me stop you there for 1 second, because I think that's a really, really important and smart thing that you just said. Reintroduce the house line if you need to. So tell us how you're using the house line.
Well, I haven't had to use it probably in the last month or so. I kind of weaned him off of it. See how he would be out of the crate? No other dogs around.
Okay.
Right? So I could just manage him on his own if I needed to, take the collar, wouldn't get in the chasing him around the house because I had a good leadership established with him anyways.
Right.
And it's really easy without all the other dogs out, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And then so we tested the waters a little bit. How much do I need this? How much do I need it today? And how much, I use it all the time outside, 100% mm-hmm. still. But inside, we started to look at, okay, let's give him a little bit more freedom. Then when we introduce one dog out a little bit, we popped that back on him. So it was kind of like a little bit of give and take.
Okay.
And then,
and why were you popping it back on him? So like from the function of this tool, how does it benefit you to have this house line?
Just to
him?
Be able to redirect him, instead of not just chase him or take his collar right away, or get into his face or the two dogs' face if they're close, where I could just step on that line,
perfect,
move him away, and then just manage him wherever I just have him sit, chew on his Nylabone or something, and kind of relax a little bit on his bed. If he got a little up too much, put him back a couple times. Then hey, okay, maybe I got to get whatever I'm doing at the side, and then pop him in his crate again.
Yeah, you know?
And just keep him comfortable with that. Just again, assessing that management and utilizing his chew toys to keep him busy. Utilizing the crate when I can't be focused in on him. He's got a lot more freedom when the other dogs are like away in there, like in a separate room or something else. And then I just reintroduce the things he needs, or that's going to make my other dogs not have to deal with the puppy on their own too. Mm, yes. So we set ourselves up with our dogs so well because of what we've done with the McCanns.
Yeah.
It's almost hard to answer that question because it just kind of flows. We don't hit those points of where I would have with the first dog I came here with.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. For sure. So I just want to, I want to stick with the house line just for a second,
because
I want people to understand clearly how this gets used. A lot of the times people think that we're using it as a leash, and that is not the case. So basically the house line is just going to be a safety break. So it might be like Swanee's tail. It just drags along behind her and really doesn't have any function.
I hid my tail well.
I knew it was there. So basically the house line just drags along behind the puppy. But if the puppy gets into mischief, if the puppy goes, ooh, I found a sock and I'm going to play keep away with it, we don't feed into that thing, right? If we chase our puppies around trying to get that sock away from them, we lose, because it's fun for them and they learn, and they practice playing keep away. They practice learning exactly how long your arms are. They practice that game until it's so well oiled that you can have two or three people trying to catch this puppy and they're just going deek, dink, all around, gone.
And if they're outdoors, they could be really gone, truly gone.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. So we do recommend a leash that is long enough to be able to control your dog. So, you know, outside you might need 20 feet if there's a bigger area, especially if you have no fenced area. If you're inside, probably anywhere from 6 to 8 feet is going to be great, but it just needs to be long enough for your puppy. So if you have a Great Dane, you might need a little bit longer because 6 to 8 feet, you know, by the time that puppy's 6 months old, it's getting lost.
They're 6 to 8 feet tall.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So yeah, being able to physically catch your puppy without chasing them and trying to tackle them, and without making them better at playing keep away, is such a huge leadership win.
Because you can just move over towards them and you step on that line.
Yep,
and then you've got them. And so it doesn't have to be this big chase or this big going after them. You just sort of neutralize them and take that collar or take it close to the collar and just redirect them away.
Yeah.
Direct them to their bed, direct them in their crate, or if they've got something in their mouth. But it's I'm not playing that keep away or chase game. That is,
it's huge.
Really,
the
benefit it's of it.
Calm leadership, what you're showing. Yes. Yeah.
Whatever you do, try to never chase your puppy. Never, never. They can chase you. You can play keep away from them and they can chase you, but don't ever chase your puppies. They'll learn how to do it better than you. I guarantee.
And they're fast.
Guaranteed. They are fast. Swift and nimble. Are you looking for guidance for your new puppy? Check out our online training program, Puppy Essentials, where we will help you figure out all of the ins and outs of your puppy. Things like crate training, house training, how to curb nipping issues, all of those things and more are things that myself and the rest of the McCann Dogs team will be able to help you with if you join us for our online training programs. Hope to see you. In addition to the house line as something that's a great management tool, there's a ton of resources that we know that are beneficial for our dog. You know, things like toys, things like training treats, things like food. Mm-hmm. And I want to talk for a minute about free feeding, because this is something that I think is a big mistake that a lot of people make. So Swanee, in a nutshell, tell us what free feeding is.
Free feeding is having a bowl of...
in a nutshell to do.
Is having a bowl of kibble out all the time for your dog. And as they eat some, you refill. A lot of people feed their cats like that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And in cats, you know, I don't really have an opinion one way or the other about free feeding with cats, but
I don't think I would. If I had a cat, I want to know what goes in and what's coming out. So,
I actually did convince my sister to go to meal feeding for her cats, and it's made a huge difference because they were very tubby.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Very
tubby.
Now they're better.
Would you ever consider free feeding?
Not anymore, but I did with my first dog.
Oh,
okay.
Long before I came to McCann's. Yeah. My first, and well overweight, for sure.
Yeah. Interesting. And would you just keep refilling the bowl?
It was a long time ago, but I think so.
Yeah.
It was just there. The food was there.
Right.
Sort of like water.
It, yeah. It was just exactly like the water dish. You know, we'll just put a little bit more in, just put a little bit more in, just put a little bit more. And then my second dog is when I originally came to McCann's as a student the very first time. Gail mentioned to me that he was a little bit overweight too. Mm. And that was by the time I had, it still had been free feeding, and that's where I put an end to the free feeding.
Right.
Gotcha.
And then the relationship started to change a little bit too. Oh,
this is exactly what I want to talk about.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Exactly what I want to talk about when it comes to this resource.
For the, I got to pay attention to this guy a little bit more.
Right. He's in charge of an important resource. Yes.
Imagine that. So if you have a dog that you are struggling with and you are free feeding that dog, think about what the messaging is for that dog, right? Do I provide all the good things for you in life, or does the food just appear and you control it? You know, it seems like for those of you who are free feeding and you're thinking like, I want my dog to have access to food all the time. Are you struggling with other things in your life? Because you know what? If you and your dog have this wonderful copacetic relationship and you have one of these dogs that's just easy and good to go, these things don't matter nearly as much. But having said that, it's still important to have good control with your dog. So answer that question honestly. You know, are they just cooperative when push comes to shove, when there's something that's conflicting in that moment, you know, I want to chase the squirrel, but you're calling me to come. What happens in that scenario? You know, does the dog turn and come back to you? And do you get the win based on their cooperation? Or does the dog go, nope, sorry, you know what? This is a moment I don't want to be cooperative because my drives are kicking in and I'm chasing that squirrel. Mm-hmm. You know, so a lot of the times we will we'll talk about free feeding and how detrimental it can be to relationship, and it doesn't necessarily come together and make a lot of sense from a certain perspective. But when you bring it in to all of the things that we need to do to get good attention from our dogs and good focus and get good respect and whatnot in a way that is nice for both of us to train, we want to make sure that we're using all these resources to our advantage. So you said a brilliant thing there. You said that when you stopped free feeding, the relationship changed. Mm-hmm. So what were the things that you noticed?
Well, this goes back quite a while ago too, but you could just set things up a little bit better. You could utilize that food, which I've done with my ketchup and Blue. Well, Blue wasn't a puppy when I got him, but ketchup was a puppy and Pontiac Bandit, using that food as that resource to train with your dog first too, instead of just dropping that bowl down, using that handful of food to work a sit or to work some luring as a puppy or whatever it may be. Because again, that value of that resource for your dog coming from you and then being the benefit of, it's luring, but it's a game. It's fun for the dog. It's that interaction instead of just plopping it down and walking away. But the relationship with the my other dog at the time, just more attention, and I was more aware of what that resource actually provided. More leadership on my end, where I kind of wasn't aware of that before, and it just builds a little bit more importance when you show up.
Exactly. and please know that when we say free feeding, we don't mean just bowl feeding, right? We don't mean that you can put a portion of kibble in the bowl, put it down for your dog, and they come and they eat it right away, and then it's gone and life goes on. We mean when you just routinely have this bowl of food down and available for the dog. Mm-hmm. It creates dogs that are grazers that sort of come, eat a few kibbles, and then go because they can come back later and eat, et cetera. It creates dogs that might overeat. It creates dogs that might undereat. There's all sorts of reasons that free feeding is not a good idea, but it's not necessarily just the act of feeding your dog in a bowl. So I just wanted to clarify that. But having said that, we do a lot of hand feeding with our puppies. Mm-hmm. I do a very small amount of bowl feeding with my puppies when I have a puppy, and a lot of hand feeding. And mm-hmm. that's to balance out training.
Yes.
Because I have so much I want to do, and I don't want to be using high value treats or extra calories for that. I want to use my dog's main food for the majority of that training. But then I also want to make sure that I have some left for, you know, I'm going to make a little bit of a positive association with the crate, with what's left in yeah. this bowl, and you can eat the rest of your meal in the crate. So that really amps up the crate being a positive space, et cetera. So we have all sorts of purposes for food. Mm-hmm. But if we don't have a purpose for food, we end up losing it as a resource. Right. So food is almost a universal resource for all dogs because they love to eat. They need to eat instinctually. It mm-hmm. their survival depends on eating. So most dogs want to eat.
Or any animal. Any animal training. Yeah. Food is the money.
Yeah. Yes. You're absolutely yeah. right. And when we have that resource, we can help guide and direct our dog's behavior. We can become someone that is worthy of our dog's attention. So we can also use it to reinforce good things that we like from the dog. So all of these reasons to have food as a resource, so important.
And going back to that, or not going any, if they're full all the time,
yeah,
how do
yeah.
you do any training with yeah. them? Because absolutely. Even if you have, or you have to get really high value treats, and then that's where we see the weight go on. And the other side of it too is, how much is your dog eating each day? And
yeah.
where, if they have they eaten a whole bunch this week or haven't they? Is there something yeah. wrong with them? And like sort of the vet checks and everything else that's involved in that too.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
especially if you had multiple dogs and you were free feeding.
Yes.
Is one dog like eating all the food?
Yeah. 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 Well, that's what was happening with my sister's cats. Even right? though they were both tubby, one was incredibly tubby.
Right.
And it was very clear that that cat was spending a lot of time at that mm-hmm. food
eating
bowl.
The food, yes.
yeah, for sure. So I want to know how you changed that with this previous dog. How did you change the habit of the dog expecting the food bowl to be there all the time? Do you remember?
It was pretty quick. I was just
cold
like...
cold turkey?
It was cold turkey. Mm-hmm. It was, okay, well, you eat. And then it was, I think it was just, okay, here you've got your bowl, you've got your meal. If you finish it, fine. But now then after a while, it was like, now you got time limits on it.
Yes.
Eat it.
What was the time limit you put on? Do you remember?
Probably about 10 minutes,
yeah.
I'm guessing. But that's yeah. just a guess at this point because it would go pretty quick mm-hmm. once that first little initial of like, hey, the food's not out all the time.
Right, yes. Yeah.
So
yes.
they would eat what they needed to eat and then it was picked up. So it would never be 10 minutes by the time I'd had to pick up the bowl. But if I did, it was like, okay, what's wrong with the dog today? Because mm-hmm. why aren't right. they eating their meal?
Yeah, yes. exactly. And having that information is so important.
Mm-hmm. Right, yes.
And sometimes it's nothing, but it's good to be aware of
yes,
that.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Especially like with an older dog, like Honda is 14 and a half. And, you know, I put his bowl of food down and he gobbles it up. If one day he doesn't eat his food, yeah. I'm going to say, Honda must not be feeling well. So yeah. right away, it gives me an early alarm that something's amiss. So
absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. So generally, the advice that we give to students when they have dogs that they're free feeding and they're trying to get away from that, or when they have dogs that are super picky, who look at the food bowl when they put it down and go, pshaw, I'm not
give me something better.
I'll wait yeah. till you bring the treats out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And a lot of the times as humans, we go, oh my gosh, I just want you to eat. So I'm going to try to add something. You know, there's this mm-hmm. whole market now for toppers for food.
Mm-hmm. Right, yes.
And it's honestly, we're shooting ourselves in the foot. We're making our dogs picky. We're creating mm-hmm. a situation where our dogs learn to hold out for better,
right.
especially if it's in response to them holding out. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of the times this happens during teething where people will put down the food bowl and the puppy will pick up a kibble and go, oh, it hurts to eat. I'm going to spit it back out. Mm-hmm. And of course, as humans, we panic over that, right? Mm-hmm. We go, oh my gosh, he's not eating. He must be sick. And we can't ask them if they're sick. And we can't say, you know, like, tell me what your symptoms are. So we get into this panicky state where everything will just be okay if he eats. You right. know, if I can get him to eat, I'll know he's okay. I'll know he's healthy. And he was just being picky. So then we rope ourselves into this situation a lot of the times where we will put something more enticing on the kibble. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, you see all these funny videos. You see all these funny videos of people like pretending to cook the meal in the microwave and then the dog eats it.
Right, yes, yes.
Like, yeah. Never seen that one.
No, you've never seen them?
Honda gets medicine on his food, liquid medicine. He has a heart condition. So every day he watches me make his food, and then I get the syringe and I syringe up his medicine and squirt it on and then hand it to him. And then he eats. And if for some reason, like, you know, I forget to put the liquid on, you could see him kind of looking at me like, you forgot something. You forgot something.
What's happening?
Yeah. So I think if I even pretended to put it on, he would definitely go, oh yeah, it's on. It's on. Yeah.
We're good to go.
Yeah.
We're good to go now.
And just dawned on me too. Like, if you're free feeding, like Bandit's going to eat and eat and eat. Like, he just burns calories. Mm-hmm. Like I can't overfeed him enough, but I still manage his food. But I know you had Meg on last week. How do you, like, you can't free feed and still train a puppy, like a Papillon.
Papillon's tiny, they're
gonna be so full, especially if they free feed, they're not gonna want to treat for the rest of the day or anything else too. So you have to, utilize what already their meal is based on the size of your dog or the energy or the calories they burn each day.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And we have so much to do with our young puppies to train that we want to make sure that we don't end up overfeeding them. So,
Or if you're on a road trip too, you know, when I moved out to Nova Scotia, you know, I got up in the morning and, okay, we got a 9-hour drive in front of us. I need my dog to eat.
Yes.
You know, I put down his breakfast and he's eaten. You know, if I free fed, it would be like, should I stop? Are they hungry? I'm not sure what to do. But, you know, I know the dogs are fed. I know they're probably going to have to go to the bathroom in an hour. So we're going to stop at that point. And
Absolutely.
Keeping a schedule is good with that.
And that's good leadership too. You know, having your dog be confident that you are going to provide for their needs when they need them is great for your leadership. And again, it makes you the bringer of resources. So the dog ends up looking to you for those resources and the things that they want. And that just makes cooperation and training so much easier for them.
We'd just gone away last weekend, all four dogs with us.
Oh, wow. That must have been busy.
All three of us, family member, went away for my son's motocross weekend, whatever, but brought the dogs, had an Airbnb at the track, had all set up in crates and had the dogs out, but like managing four dogs and everything else on top of that. But going back to the food wise, but having them on a schedule, knowing when they're eating, it just made it.
It's one less thing to worry about.
The crates and utilizing the dogs and having them be comfortable around each other and utilizing the X-Pen at that point too. And all those things kind of wouldn't have just happened.
Yeah, absolutely. And it just makes life so much neater and tidier, and everybody's needs are met and nobody's been forgotten. If you are free feeding your dog, so the typical advice that we tend to give is offer them their meal, the portion that you are going to give them for the meal, not a huge bowl full, and take it up after 10 minutes if they've not eaten it. You know, if they come and go from it, take it up after 10 minutes. And it's not about depriving them. You know, we're not trying to say, okay, now I'm going to starve you. No healthy dog is going to starve themselves. Right. So what's important is that psychologically they go, oh, I can't just come and go and graze. I better eat while I have the opportunity to eat. And then at that point, you have a dog that goes, oh, I see my food's going down. I'm going to eat it. And then you lose all that pickiness, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of the times we do that to ourselves by, you know, panicking in those moments where they don't eat, going for the toppers, even just adding toppers on a daily basis just because we think it's nice to do for our dogs. It's probably not going to be the most ideal thing to do with your dog's meals because we don't want them picking out the things that they like. And ignoring the things that they don't.
I don't remember who it was, but one of my friends fed kibbles and bits. And the dog only ate the bits. And I remember them telling me that, he picks out all the bits. Doesn't eat the kibbles. So yeah, they'll just pick through and eat what they want. And if you refill it up, he's just going to pick out the bits again.
Yeah.
And we often get that question too. And we'll tell the students if they have been pre-feeding and it's like, well, what if they don't eat that first meal? I go, well, they'll eat the second one.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to go hungry. They just haven't realized what the situation is yet.
Yes, exactly. And if you have a dog that is withholding and not eating food and it's out of character, that's a trip to the vet. Mm-hmm. You know, that's watch. And then react quickly because there's probably something going on there that you're going to need a professional's help with. So, it's definitely free feeding can throw off a whole lot of things. Yes. So,
And we, but mostly it devalues you at the end of the day if you want to get everything you can out of your dog.
Absolutely. And that includes, so we've talked about food, but I want to talk a little bit about toys too. So in terms of toys, when you hit this sort of adolescent moment, I'm sure that you had started to loosen up on leaving toys around and not necessarily, you know, interactive toys, but chew toys, for example, or having the ability to leave those things around without thinking about it twice. When you have a dog that's a youngster or an adolescent, are you making adjustments to that?
Again, he's been really good. Like Nala Bones, Kongs, stuff the Kong sometimes, especially when he's in his crate, just to kind of keep him busy. And we probably, under my couch, there's probably about seven Nala Bones.
When you vacuum.
They always find their way under there. And
of like course.
No, we have a couple of Nala Bones strewn across the house. I'm sure right now somewhere on the floor. And then we have our interactive toys that we'll do tugging and stuff with. And yeah, those will go away the moment, because they find those little tags right on the, like anything soft. But they'll find the tag on the end. They'll have a nice little toy or whatever, but they just want to play with the tag.
Play with the little tag. Of course.
It's like the kid playing with the box instead of the dollhouse.
So yeah, the interactive toys, they go back away, but we kind of leave them out, and then we'll leave one in his crate, and, or if he's at, bring him to work, he'll have a Nala Bone in his crate. But it's funny when you realize, and you're asking me the questions too, is when you kind of follow the method and follow the plan. You don't really have like those, oh, well, we needed to do this or we needed to adjust this so much.
There's not as much adjustment. Well, it sounds like it's certainly making your life a lot easier as you hit adolescence. So I'm sure that that's a good learning tool for people as well. But if you have a dog that is a bit of an adolescent right now, it's well worth your while to take up all those excess toys and whatnot. Actually, for clarity for the dog, it's best to have one or two chew toys out for them tops anyways, so that they know that those two are their chew toys and your shoes are not their chew toys and your remote control and your glasses and all the other things.
And those are the things that we never got in that trouble about, because we were supervising, went out, and then this was your toy. And like, they go investigate, and you know, they're puppies, they're looking around, but then you just redirect them with that house line, then give them the Nala Bone or whatever you're using as their chew toy.
And then they start so simple. Yes.
Why do people have so much trouble?
I think it's just, it's often lack of supervision, too much freedom.
Well, it's the cart before the horse thing, right? Yes. Like, we all want that shiny thing at the end of the workload, but we need to get there.
We do the work to get there, yes.
Yeah, we need to get there first. And if we put the cart before the horse and we give the dog the freedom before they're ready for it, then it becomes frustrating because they're not going to make the right choices. No. They're just not. Until they have more training, more knowledge, more understanding, they're going to make mistakes. In their world, they're not mistakes. You know, chewing the couch is not a mistake in a dog world.
No.
It's a mistake in a human world because we go out and we purchase a couch and we want that couch to last and we don't want it to have big teeth marks in it. Dogs don't care about that.
No.
They don't understand any of that.
They think it looks better with teeth marks in
it. Exactly. Exactly. I think it looks better with teeth marks in it too. But, you know, that's my style. I'm pretty odd.
And, like any of the, like if I had the interactive toys and they were just on, they'd all be shredded in shred it in 5 minutes.
And they're expensive.
Tell us what you mean by interactive toys, because I don't think we clarified that either, and that's an important point.
So any of our tug toys, most of the people recognize anything like a soft toy, anything that they're chewing on, that we would, anything with stuffing too. Like, that's the main thing. And where I don't want to leave that is because, again, my dog would shred that in like about 5 minutes. And then they're ingest it all. Or they have potential to ingest it all. And also, when we're playing with that, it's that interaction between us that this toy comes out and it builds, again, value for me, just like with the food we talked about, where it's building that value. Hey, this fun thing that we get to tug with is not just he plays on his own. It's about us playing with that game. But also learns, I've noticed with him, because he's got such a strong jaw and such a strong chewer, that he can, like if he was tearing stuff or pulling away, I could interrupt him on that. And then reintroduce it to him so he would learn that not tearing it apart.
Okay.
Still like chew on it, like it's appropriate to chewing with that right toy.
Right.
Then if it was too much again, then trade that out for the Nala Bone so he could really going to get that energy out too.
Yeah, for sure. And if you can encourage your dogs to chew on things that are safe and durable, I mean, that is a great way to help them pass some time as well and keep them occupied and out of mischief, et cetera. It's always nice to be able to give them something in the crate as well. We always talk about interactive toys being the things that are interactive. So they're only out when we're playing with our pups. The chew toys are the things that you know they're not going to be able to shred and ingest. Mm-hmm. Anything that is not fully 100% edible, they shouldn't be able to take chunks off of because that can cause a blockage. So that can, of course, be incredibly dangerous for our dogs. As Swanee will attest, having worked at an emergency vet clinic.
Yes, yes. We saw lots of different things inside dogs' stomachs.
Yeah.
Yes.
Anything edible, right? Or anything that they can ingest, they will. They will generally try to ingest when they're young. They grow up a little bit out of that, but if it becomes a habit for them and if they're used to scouring the house for things they can eat, that's going to be what they go to. They're not ever going to grow out of that if the habit has been created.
So I remember seeing, we had quite a few dogs. I was surprised who would eat a fishing lure or a fishing hook.
Oh gosh. Yeah, I bet because they would be because
they smell
stinky.
Like fish. Yeah. Yep. And sometimes they had the line attached to
them.
That's
terrifying.
Yeah.
Ugh. That's really terrifying.
But I was like taken aback. It's like, how many dogs are, have access to fishing kits or are at the dock with you while you're fishing?
Yeah.
But I was quite surprised.
Oh my goodness. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Well, what are your plans for Pontiac Bandit now? So you've done some foundational obedience. What is your goal with him? What's your long term?
Agility for sure.
Okay.
That's like the main one. Love agility. But we may expand, do some disc stuff. The sky's kind of the limit. Like, I really don't know. I'm not as quick as I used to be.
We all have that problem.
Oh, I've quickened up as I've gotten older. No.
So some more stationary events or, agility. That's that main goal.
Maybe some dock diving too.
Dock
diving. I think he'd be really good at that sport.
Has he been in the water yet? Not open water, for sure. No, I hasn't been in any open water yet. But,
he's going to love it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. And you know, my wife's training him right now too, which is fantastic. Okay.
Yes, yep, yes, yes. So I'm helping in the class that she's in. She's doing an awesome job.
To have that sort of extra level of interaction too, just so like the whole family can kind of go through the training is just awesome because he's a lot of dog.
Yes.
And then your ultimate goal is like a fantastic companion at home.
Yeah.
You don't want a dog that's impossible to live with. Yes.
Yeah. Well, and he has to fit in with your other dogs. He has to fit in with your son. Family, he has to fit in with all the other things that you do in life as well. Yeah, absolutely. And
that was like, I guess, kind of thinking back now when we do a beginning question about like, how did you come to that decision? One of my wife's was, well, I want to be able to take him everywhere. I want to be able to take him everywhere.
Yeah. That's important.
So,
yes.
So nice. We had to make sure we could set it up right from the beginning because that's what we wanted like to do. And we were kind of went through that. It was small steps last weekend, but we were able to take all four dogs away with us.
Yeah.
Quite comfortably. Right. I mean, it wasn't very comfortable packing up the car with four dog crates and everything else.
But what vehicle? You have a pickup truck, right?
We had to rent a van.
Though. Oh, rent. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Because we had a hauler motorbike with us, too.
Yeah, the motor. Yes, they don't, they're not as easy to transport as a dog.
You're going to need a bus.
Yeah, that's what we're looking for.
Or one of those toy haulers, I guess, like one of those trailers that you pull that you can put all that in the back. Yeah, we'll spend Rob's money for it.
All your luggage. Yeah,
let us do your shopping. Just give us your credit card.
We'll make life comfortable for you.
Do you want to do the first question, Rob? Sometimes they're upside down, just to warn you.
let me see if I can read the handwriting too. Okay, I have a 10-month-old miniature schnauzer. He is very fussy eater, has no particular favorite treat. Is there anything in your opinion a treat that would work best or he would never refuse?
What do you think for treats? What do you think is the ultimate treat?
You know what? For my dogs, anyways, it's anything of our leftovers.
Utilizing some of the leftovers.
Like leftover chicken, leftover steak, cheese, just kind of the easy stuff. Nothing super fancy. I don't buy a lot of store-bought treats for my dog because there's just so much resource of like just cheese or chicken wieners. You know, just small, inexpensive things that the inexpensive, like you have four dogs, 20, 30 bags of treats every week.
Yeah. My Saluki was extremely picky to the point where I was like, how am I even going to train this dog? And I happened upon beef heart and beef kidney. I would boil them up. And same thing, they're inexpensive, mm-hmm. and you get a lot of meat on them. Yeah. And she loved them. But really, now I never took a bite out of my big beef kidney, but I would pretend to eat it sometimes. And if they think you're eating it, sometimes they think,
that looks tasty.
Yeah.
Like, kind of goes back to the other question, though. Like, if they're picky, but are they free feeding
right.
too?
Right, what's behind the scenes?
Are they motivated to eat?
Yeah, definitely I would change that. If you have a picky dog and you're free feeding, those two things go hand in hand. They're, free feeding is going to make a picky dog because they can help hold out. They learn how to hold out. So I personally like to figure out what the dog likes because ultimately it's the dog that decides what's rewarding. It's the dog that decides what's aversive. So I look at the dog and I think, like, what do they gravitate towards? Do they like toys? Do they like chase games? Do they like one of the, I have a ton of reward systems for my dogs that don't necessarily have anything to do with food or toys per se, but like, I can reward Ned at this point by picking up and throwing a pine cone if I'm out and about. If it's snowing, I can reward him by scooping up some snow and throwing. He thinks that's the greatest thing in the world. He loves butt scratches. So like a great reward for him is a butt scratch. And he just will sidle right in and that becomes incredibly valuable for him. So
Shannon, you should have a freezer full of snow in your basement that you can use all year round.
Oh no, that's where I keep the bodies. It's full. But yeah, I would say, think about whether or not your free feeding or meal feeding is working to your advantage. Think critically about your dog's weight too. This is a thing that we have a hard time. Mm-hmm. We really have a hard time. And I'll tell you, it's almost as offensive for people when we say your dog's a little bit overweight. It's almost as offensive as if we said they were overweight.
Right. Yes. People take it
very personally, and we don't intend it to be something that people take personally, but they need to know and adjust and help their dogs get into a fitter place. And so it comes from a good place from us when we say, you know, you could take some weight off your dog, but look at that honestly and critically and think, is my dog overweight? Right. Are they always satiated in terms of food? And that's contributing to the pickiness as well. And then of course we talked about,
and if you're constantly using those same treats, they're way more value than eating out of their bowl. Too.
Yeah.
Right. The opposite side of it, the sort of hierarchy of it. But my dog's treats are always really small, especially when I'm training, because that's what we'll see is like very big treats and the dogs get full on them.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Some people have a milk bone they give their dog. Yeah.
Like I cut up the little ones. Like I cut them in half or like break them in half because it's just that quick little taste. And then going back to like when I'm first teaching or introducing a new exercise, I'm using that best treat. But down the road, okay, that's a kibble treat. And then that next level of what we're working at, then pulling out the big guns, I guess.
Yes. I find some people too, like you need to use some tough love. So, you know, I've gone and I've diced up my treats and I'm starting to train and I give one to my dog and the dog says, don't want it. If I go, oh, come on. And, you know, coddle and beg the dog, the dog's like, this is pretty cool. Look all the attention I'm getting for refusing a treat.
Yeah.
Instead, I just go, oh, well, treat goes away and you can go sit in your crate for a little bit.
Pretend to eat it yourself.
Think it over. Yeah. So if they don't want the treat, I just take it away and I don't allow them to run around and self-reward. It's like, well, why don't you go sit in the crate and maybe in an hour we'll bring you out again and do another sit and see if you want the treat.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. We should do a full episode on self-reward because we could fill a lot of time talking about what constitutes self-reward. Yes. I love that idea. Okay.
Next question.
It was my idea and I said I loved it.
Shannon, you love your ideas.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, this is good big writing. Yes. My puppy is rarely food motivated with her kibble, but will take real meat, cheese, or treats any day. Help.
Yeah. So that's the holding out for better piece.
Right. Yes. So we've talked about that. Holding out for better. I would say offer the kibble and, you don't want it? Oh, well. You can go and sit in your crate and think about it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And dogs do have FOMO for real too. Like we can use those psychological games to our advantage. I will often, if I'm working with a young dog and they're like, you know what? I could take or leave you right now just because that's life. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, you can go in your crate and I'm going to work with my other dog right in front of the crate.
Yeah.
And I'm going to make you a little envious of the fact that you're not getting to work now and we're having all this fun out here. And tactically, this works great. When you bring the puppy out the next time, they're much more focused.
Right, yes.
They're much more eager to do.
Right, what? And I'll also, too, make sure the dog is hungry when I train. So yeah. It's like I'm not going to give the dog breakfast and then half an hour later go out to train. I'm going to say, okay, let's train with your kibble.
Yeah.
Then I will give you whatever's left for your breakfast.
And if they start to learn to hold out, then it's like you're taking them to a 5-star restaurant every single
night.
Right,
yes.
Which sounds really nice.
I never thought of that. Ooh. Yeah.
But you can't do that. Sometimes you just got to make steak. Or not make steak, just make...
Sometimes you got to eat a hot dog.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's it.
Yep.
Alrighty, here's my question here. I live in an apartment with my puppy and older dog. I simply don't have time or energy to train them separately. What should I do? So, I mean, this is a hard question to answer because if you get a puppy, you're going to need to resign to the fact that you're going to need to give them time.
Yes.
Like this is, it's not negotiable. It's like saying, oh, I'm going to have a second child, but now I don't have time for them. So I can't educate them and feed them. Like it's not possible. I mean, if you have a well-trained older dog, a lot of the times you can make things work a little bit easier, but still chances are in the early stages, that puppy is going to be really keen about the other dog and it's going to be a bigger struggle for you and probably take more time in the long run. So, I mean, realistically, I would say if you don't have time for a puppy, it's probably not the right time for a puppy.
To get a puppy, you know? Yes.
And
like, why are you getting that puppy if you don't have time for it?
That's what I was just wondering there. Like, what is the point of getting the other puppy? Are you trying to get another puppy for your other dog to keep them preoccupied? Or is it just that you're more of a weekend warrior? So you don't want to do the work through the week, but you have time for the dogs on the weekend. Like you've got to figure out how to make that dog part of your life, how to make training part of your everyday life. We talk a lot about making training part of your day to day. You know, maybe that's the way to look at it instead of thinking, okay, I need to have a half an hour chunk to train this puppy. That's not realistic anyways, right? Our dogs are always learning. So if we take the opportunities as they're happening to, you know, build skills. Like I do this with my own puppies. We have incredibly busy lives. I mean, people often think that we sit around and train our own dogs all day, but I don't even get to train my own dogs because I'm so busy with everything else that goes on as a professional dog trainer, right. You know, working with other people, dealing with computer stuff, dealing with scheduling, like all of the things that take up the time in your day. Mm-hmm. So you make it work when it's happening a lot of the times. You know, I will put on a coffee and as I'm waiting for the coffee, like right now I don't have a puppy in the house. So as I'm waiting for my coffee, I unstack the dishwasher, you know, but if, well, once my puppy comes home in a couple of weeks, the dishwasher is going to stay full. Maybe I'll pass that chore along.
Well, you'll have all just takeout food. You won't even need dishes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There you go. And I'll be working with my puppy in those moments because those moments are opportune times rather than standing there waiting for the coffee to pour. All right, I'm going to do some work with my puppy and I can get in lots of skills training.
So many people now just sit and scroll on their phone. You know, those days are gone when you have a puppy.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely. And then the other thing I would say is we talked about a little bit already. And we've done episodes on this as well, is getting the breed that matches your lifestyle.
Yes.
You know, if you have a lifestyle where you like to relax in the evenings and you want a couch potato dog, that's the kind of dog you should bring home to live with you. Don't get a border collie that needs daily mental, physical stimulation that is excessive if you don't want to put in that time. It's just not realistic.
And just even the wording in the question, what's the training? That was my first thought, because there's nothing I do with my older dogs that would relate to training at the same time with my puppy anyway. Yeah. So you have to find that time.
Exactly. Yes.
And it can't be, even if your training is just taking them for a walk, you need to separate that completely just to begin with, because you're also going to be however old, like this is the next 10 to 12 to 15 year investment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Get it right from the beginning.
Like this intensity in the work is short lived in the beginning, right? If we put a lot of effort into that first year, we're going to get a lot out of it. Yeah. And then we're going to be able to coast for the rest of the, for the majority of the rest of the dog's life, you know, unless you're like us, where training just continues all day, every day for the rest of the dog's life, because we want to do agility and I want to do field and I want to do nose work and I want to, you know, I have all these things on my to-do list I want to do. If I just wanted a pet to hang out with, I just need the basics. So get the basics done, get the listening in play, and then from there you can coast and you can enjoy two dogs.
Yes.
And that's where my other point where taking my wife just wants a dog that she can take everywhere. Right. Yeah. You know, she doesn't want to do all the training, like the same level of where we take our dogs.
Right.
Just want the dogs, all four of them, to be able to go somewhere and not drive you nuts, right? Yeah. So you, how do you, unless you take that time and separate the puppy and focus the training on them and then bring in the, each of the other ones to it, it's so much easier.
Yeah, like she might even want to consider a different pet as a companion for her dog.
That is a really good point, because there's a lot of animals that are so much easier than dogs.
Yes.
So.
I just...
Kangaroos? Yep. Piece of cake. Piece of cake.
Something that came to mind was I had two corgis, and I had just become pregnant, and one of the corgis passed away. And I felt bad for Gavin, because he suddenly was alone, and he had never been alone as the only dog. But I recognized that I've never been a new mom before, and the baby was going to be quite a bit of work. And so I ended up getting a canary. And I thought, you know what? It's something in the house. So Gavin's
Sprout,
not
right?
alone. Yeah, it was Sprout. Yeah, Sprout, my canary. And Sprout was a fantastic little bird. I loved him so much. And so... And I feel that even though they never interacted, there was another animal in the house.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was not alone in the house anymore, because Sprout sang his little heart out constantly. Aww. He would drown out the TV set. But, so instead of getting another puppy, it's like, no, I recognized at that moment it wasn't a good time. I'm going to get a different pet.
Yeah. What would you recommend for a different pet, Rob? What would you go to if you couldn't get another dog but you wanted something else right now? Kangaroo's taken.
I am such a dog person.
I know, me too.
Well, you know, I had pet rats. I had pet rats, and they were so awesome. We've both had pet rats, and they're so they're like little dogs, Rob.
Yeah.
You need to get a pet rat.
There you go.
We'll do that when we get your credit card later to go shopping for him. Yeah, we'll get you some rats.
Oh my gosh. So be ready for us to show up on your doorstep with at least two rats.
At least two rats and the big trailer.
And a big trailer.
Yeah.
I'll take the trailer.
Well, it has been fun having you on again, Rob. We'll have to check in with Pontiac Bandit in a few months down the road again. But aside from that, I'm Instructor Shannon.
Instructor Christine.
Instructor Rob.
Happy training.
The McCann Dogs Podcast is brought to you by McCann Professional Dog Trainers. We help dog owners to have a well-behaved, four-legged family member. Please give us a call at 905-659-1888 or visit us at McCannDogs.com. Happy training!